Recorded.
I'd like to call this Planning Commission work session to order for Thursday, March 2nd, 2023. My name is Carl Johnson, and I'm the chairman of the Clark County Planning Commission. Before we begin tonight, I'd like to announce that our Planning Commission work session, our sessions are hybrid, both in-person and via WebEx. For the virtual and in-person members of the Planning Commission staff, please ensure that your microphones are turned off and muted unless you are speaking. There will not be any public comment during this work session, but members of the public can watch and listen. This evening agenda is planned as follows. We'll start off with Jose has the Louisville Scrivener's errors. Jose also has a comprehensive plan text amendment. Gary Albright has the 176th proposed amendment, and then the capital facilities plan 2023 to 2028. Jackie Kemp. We'll see if there's any comments from the Planning Commission members. But right now, where it's called to order, I'd like to also at this time welcome Jack Haroon as our newest Planning Commissioner. He is official. He was sitting in on our last hearing, but today he is official and he's getting himself wired in right now. So with that said, Jose, I think you're up first.
Thank you, Carl. I think I'm going to need Larissa's help to run the slides, but when she's done. We're a little backed up.
We're getting going here right now. We're just getting some technical issues straightened out.
Okay, so the first item is CPZ 2022-0018. It's a Louisville Scrivener's error. And next slide. So we're just going to go through an overview of the project, the background, proposed action, the staff findings and recommendations, and the process and next steps. Next slide. Okay, so on the left-hand side, you can see there's two maps on the left-hand side, just an area map. This property is just outside of the Battleground urban growth area, generally in Louisville, the surface mining area, if you're familiar with that. It's off of 269th, off of 503. On the right, you can see the parcel. It's a 1.2 acre parcel, 40 foot wide. It looks like it's an access road for the property to the west. That's part of the Louisville surface mining area. Next slide, please. Like I said, the property is located at the intersection there of Northeast 269th Street and Northeast 112th Avenue. It's a 1.2 acre lot, zoned R5. To the west and south, that the hash mark is the surface mining overlay. And most of that property is zoned FR40. You can see to the west, if you follow the stair step down, that area is zoned R5, as are the parcels to the east of the subject property. Next slide, please. So the issue here is that the property owner came in for a pre-application conference. They were going to update their surface mining in a different area, and they noticed that this parcel did not have the surface mining overlay, which they thought it had. So they wanted us to look into that. We did look into that. We looked at the maps from 1994 up to the current maps and noticed that in 1994, the surface mining overlay was on the property, and it was about 2014, 2015, when we were updating the surface mining overlay, that the overlay was removed from the property. However, when the overlay was removed from the property in 2014, it wasn't supposed to be. There was no record of that property even being considered for surface mining overlay removal. So I'll show you the maps of what was adopted at the time. We identified areas where surface mining overlay was supposed to be removed. And also there was a list of different items that sort of a text box that showed what the changes were supposed to be. And this property was not included in either of those. Next slide, please. So this is the site, and on that northern piece, it's really hard to see, but the surface mining overlay is on the parcel there. Back in 1994, the next slide, we're just gonna go through. In 07, it's still on the property. Next slide. 2012, it's still there. And then next slide. In 2015 is a little clearer that it's not on that, that the hash mark doesn't go through. It's very difficult. Sure. Yes. Oh, yes. Next slide. Okay, so this is the changes that were adopted as part of the 2014 recommendation for the surface mining overlay changes. And I've circled in red there that this is this area, and there's nothing in there that showed that there was going to be a change to this overlay designation. The removal of the surface mining overlay is highlighted in yellow. There's no highlighted areas in yellow related to this property. Next slide, please. And this is just sort of a table of the recommendations. And again, there's no description or calling out of this area for removal of the surface mining overlay. So we are very confident that this is a mapping error. Next slide, please. So the for the criteria for all map changes, we have to meet all of these criteria. What we find is that since this was a mapping error, the property meets the criteria that was in place when it was first designated back in 1994. So that would apply to this criteria A, that is in conformance with the Growth Management Act and the WAC. Next slide, please. Also the locational criteria for the same rationale. Next slide. It's not really an amendment, it's just a correction of a mapping error. So same issue. And then D, this is clearly a mapping error, and that's what's before you, is to correct that mapping error. Criterion E is the next, and it doesn't apply because it's not in the urban growth area. Next slide, please. So we're recommending that you make a recommendation of approval to council to correct the mapping error. Wish I had more specifics for you about why that happened, but there is that property line of this parcel is actually a section line also, and that's a lot of times where we see some of these errors. When those things are the same. Do you have any questions at this point?
So being part of that, Jose, mm-hmm. time when I think this room was full too, that was a contentious hearing. So have we heard anybody say anything other than this is quite obvious.
We just sent out notice, and so the other thing is that we went over, we had these surface mining overlay issues of late. We did do an expansive notice for this. We did a mile radius for this change, and I have not heard anything in opposition or there is one comment that came in for the SEPA from WashDOT, because there is an airport strip that's going through the residential land division just to the east of this property. So it's been there for a while, as has this surface mining overlay since before 94. That's the, yes, the strip. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Hello, this is Chris Cook. So there's an echo for my voice, if you can deal with that. But I also wanted to mention that whoever was speaking before was not speaking into a microphone, or in any event, it wasn't reasonably well picked up. So it was not audible for those of us attending virtually.
Okay, Jack, Haroon. Should be a green light on it. Crap.
Okay, so my question is, if it was a simple clerical error, why is it before us? If there's no record, it was never changed, it was never nothing, it was literally just somebody on the GIS didn't click a button, why would this not just be handled at an administrative level and just correct it and have to go through an entire process?
So, I mean, as you saw, we have maps from 2015 to now that's showing that the overlay is not on the property. So we're going through the process to document the fact that there was an error and that we're correcting the error. And if we did it as an administrative thing, we'd have a record of a point in time where there wasn't a surface mining overlay on it, and then all of a sudden it reappeared. So we're just trying to document.
Jack, we also get Scrivener errors quite often. They'll just go through. Usually there's a bundle of them, or we'll try to go through them, and usually we kind of go, you know, so.
So this is Eldon. Is the mapping done internally to the department, or do you outsource the mapping?
It's not internal to the department. The GIS staff, so typically when we amend a map, we'll send the adopting ordinance to our GIS staff as a separate department. They update the maps. We will review them afterwards to make sure that they're consistent. In this case, they removed something that there was no change, so we had no way of looking for it. It's a needle in a haystack at that point. But when we affirmatively do make changes, that's the process. We'll share that with the adopting ordinance with GIS staff so that they know that the authorized change has been made by the legislative body, and then we'll check that and update our comp plan maps that we'll put on the web.
Any other questions?
If I could interject one more time. Well, maybe two more times. Can we deal with the echo?
Is your microphone on?
Okay. Did that seems to have done it. I was going to let Commissioner Haroon know that we don't do administrative changes to the comprehensive plan. That is just not a thing that is authorized by law.
Thanks. I guess the flip side.
You're new.
Yeah, no, I'm learning. In my mind, the flip side was it was changed by the mapping error, which by law they couldn't do.
Right.
So it's the other side of the coin of they were just correcting a mistake. So because we're not actually changing anything, it's already there, is my understanding. So that was just my question from a administrative versus a procedural, but I certainly understand.
Any other questions? Okay, with that said, we're moving on to the comprehensive plan text amendment. And Jose, you're still up.
Wait for the presentation to come up. Okay. So this is CPZ 2022-0017. It's a comprehensive plan text amendment. Again, same background, proposed action, findings and recommendations, and the process and next steps. Next slide, please. So this is pretty straightforward, simple. Again, back to 2014 when the surface mining overlay was being reviewed, there was a code change that was made that had the extraction of rock, stone, gravel, sand, earth, and minerals went from being a permitted use to a conditional use as part of that process. And the proposal is to, in our comprehensive plan section, under mineral lands, it still shows the extraction of mineral resources as a permitted outright use, and we're looking to make a text amendment to make it consistent with what is in the county code, which is those require conditional use permits. Next slide. And there in the highlighted, you can see the proposed new sentence to clarify that and the language that's being struck out. Next slide. So for text changes, we have to be consistent with CCC 4560.010K2 to approve plan text or policy changes when the amendment complies and is consistent with all the applicable requirements of the Growth Management Act and Washington Administrative Code. We find that the amendment will make this consistent with the Surface Mining Overlay Code. I think when this was adopted as requiring a conditional use permit for the extraction of mineral resources, it was to provide a tool to use and assist in minimizing conflicts between surface mining and surrounding land uses and to minimize impacts on the environment. So we find that that criterion is met. So we are making, again, that criteria is met, we're making recommendation to approve. We'll have this hearing and then 2 weeks, we'll have this work session in 2 weeks, we'll have our public hearing. The council hearing has yet to be scheduled. I think we're gonna have a work session with council maybe in mid-April on all of the 2022 annual reviews and dockets, and then there's about
18 hearings between May and July that the council is going to be hearing of all your work for the last, from last year. Yeah, that's a lot. So if you have any questions about this particular item.
Questions, gentlemen? One question. What was the genesis of, was it just a, what's that?
Sorry about that. I should have called that. Oh. Go ahead, Jack.
Go
ahead. Continue your thought.
Oh, my apologies. What was the genesis of changing it from an outright permitted use to conditional use? What was the reasoning behind that, or was it? And I guess where is this coming at direction from council, or is this a?
So yes, the council adopted this in 2014. That was like the culmination of a four-year process to update the surface mining overlay ordinance. I think it came at the end of the process. There was some compromise with some of the constituents. A lot of surface mining overlay was in areas adjacent to a lot of R5 zoning. And so there's a lot of outcry for making that a conditional use as opposed to a permitted use outright.
May I interject?
Yes, go ahead.
Am I still echoing? Okay. This is another mistake that's being corrected. It's a Scrivener's error. And the Scrivener's error was pointed out to the county in the appeal of the Salache Bluff surface mining overlay. The lawyer for the other side said, look, their comprehensive plan says as soon as you have this overlay, they have a right, they are permitted as of right to mine. And everybody at the county knew that in 2014, that had been changed to a conditional use. Council did that. And we couldn't imagine how he was getting the notion that this was a use permitted as of right. And the reason was because out of all the changes that were made in 2014, that little strip of land didn't get, it had its overlay removed, and there was one sentence that didn't get taken out of the comprehensive plan. So this changes that one sentence. It conforms with the rest of the plan, and it conforms with the Clark County Code, which was adopted then and has been implemented since then. Does that help at all?
Well, isn't... I'm saying that this is a comp plan text amendment.
Yes.
Not a Scrivener's error. You said it was a Scrivener's error.
Well, what was it? Yes, it is both. A Scrivener's error means that the text amendment is needed because there was a Scrivener's error. And that's what happened here. Someone simply overlooked that sentence.
Brian, you had a comment, questions?
Yeah, Jose, and this may not actually apply to this one. It may apply to the last one. One of the public comments that we received was an airport recommendations for obstructions. And was that public comment because of the 40-foot piece of property and that there's a possibility of when this is in the mining overlay district, again, that there's potential obstruction for the airport?
That's, I think, the comment that we got from WashDOT about a potential conflict. I know that there's a proposal currently to the west to expand the surface mining overlay. This property, looking at that, is really not going to act. It's going to be really more of a buffer of the setback. adding to the setbacks. I don't anticipate this ever being mine per se, because of its proximity to the rural five to the east. So I don't anticipate that's going to be an issue with the airport.
Yeah, sorry for bringing that up at this point. I was having a hard time putting that comment with which one of these proposals was in front of us and how it applied. But once you mentioned the airport, it started making sense, and why there would be a concern at this time to correct the Scrivener's error for the airport. So it was a little confusing. So thanks for straightening that out.
Sure.
Any other questions for the comp plan's text amendment? Okay, thank you, Jose. Next up is Northeast 176th Street. Gary?
Hi. Gary Albrecht, Clark County Community Planning. We're here to talk about CPZ 2022-00013, Arturo Atlas Amendments. And we have, there we go. Thank you, Larissa. So the proposal is to remove a proposed road on Northeast 176th Street. That's the second slide. So the road is near I-5 and Northeast 179th Street between Northeast Union Road. Can you go back? Thank you. Northeast Union Road on the left of that dot and Northeast 15th Avenue on the right of that dot. Okay, next slide, please. So there are two property owners in this area. So the in the image that you're looking at, that's one property owner owns all that property. That's the Three Creeks property, and then the property to the south is owned by Michael Werner. He's proposing to have an RV site there, and that's the aerial image of the property. Next slide, please. The comp plan designation is general commercial, and the zoning is commercial. And next slide. The proposed road is the red dashed line. The Three Creeks development is on the north, as I've already said, and Michael Werner's property is on the south. The Three Creeks property is part of the Three Creeks development agreement. And next slide, please. Here is an image of the proposed site plan. So Northeast Union Road is on the upper left, which would be vacated. And this concept plan matches with Washington State Department of Transportation's long-term vision of removing access to Northeast 179th Street as part of the I-5 interchange replacement project. Next slide, please. So the next several slides, we will address the Arturo Atlas Amendments criteria. And criteria A demonstrates a need for the proposed change as seen in the preliminary conceptual site plan and reconfiguration of access for Northeast Union Road as part of the WashDOT interchange project scheduled to begin design summer of 2023 and the construction scheduled to begin 2027 and completed in 2029. At the current budget, current budget today. And then, so criterion A is met. Next slide, please. And then criterion B is to ensure that the proposed change complies with GMA. The proposed change does not impact the level of service standard consistent with RCW 36.70A.6.A.B and Clark County Code 40.350.020, the Transportation Concurrency Management System. The preliminary conceptual plan provides infrastructure for sidewalks and bike lanes, encouraging community access and promoting healthy lifestyles consistent with RCW 3670.070.6.A.7, conforms with Clark County Code policies and code. Criterion B is met. Next slide, please. Criterion C, this proposed change is consistent with the adopted comp plan, including the land use plan and the rest of the Arturo Atlas. The preliminary conceptual plan developed on commercial land, commercial designated land, and is consistent with the adopted land use plan. The site plan supports the rest of the Arturo Atlas by helping to ensure community access and promote healthy lifestyles. The proposed alignment conflicts with an exclusive easement on the existing natural gas transmission line. So criterion C is met. Thank you, Larissa. Criterion D, the proposed change is consistent with applicable interlocal agreements. The proposal better implements the adopted developers agreement, resolution 2019-0805, and adjacent development on Michael Werner's property. The change is consistent with WSDOT's long-term vision of disconnecting Northeast Union Road. Criterion D is met. Next slide, please. And criterion E, proposed change does not conflict with the adopted Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And the proposed change is consistent with Southwest Washington's Regional Transportation Council, Regional Transportation Plan, which is the Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And eventually, we're going to go back into their code and rename that, because we don't have a Metropolitan Transportation Plan. We have a Regional Transportation Plan. So that's another day. We'll come back and address that code. So the existing county transportation system can't accommodate this proposed change. Criterion E is met. Next slide. The Arturo Atlas criteria proposed change is shown in this table and is supported by staff with a recommendation to approve. Next slide. This slide shows our public process for work sessions, hearings, and adoption. And I've added a council work session and a council hearing. And I might have jumped ahead of myself. That was through an email from Jose, so I'm not quite sure if it's actually going to happen on April 12th, but those are probably all tentative dates. Yep, okay, and that's it. Next slide, please. That's it. I'm here to answer any questions.
Gary, just for clarity, will you go back to the map, the one that's the finished map? That's, keep going. Right there. So just to make sure I know what I'm talking about here, are we removing something from access to 179th? Is that what you said? But
well,
I still see access here.
So can you go back to a previous picture? That one there?
Yeah.
So on the left side of that is Northeast Union Road.
Okay.
So the site plan the preliminary site plan shows that they're going to, they won't use access to Northeast Union Road.
I see the one. I had it off one. Okay. All right.
So, and then can you go back to the preliminary site plan? So that green area is all open space.
Yeah.
And so the developer would have to vacate the property, and which would line up with the intent of the interchange, of reconfiguration.
Okay. Makes sense. Questions, gentlemen? Eldon? Jack? Oh, go ahead.
Again, just getting your help on understanding the Werner property. Are they in favor of this also? Of
yes.
This being removed?
Yeah, can you go back to the previous slide? So that one there, so they have a site plan that's been approved, and they're required to build the half street improvement for this. It's a collector road, a C2.
Okay.
So they're required to build it, and that property owner will be happy to not have to build that. Mm-hmm. So that if this is approved, so they'll go back through and do a site plan approval, a change. So they'll have to come in and ask for a change for that property. They'll have to pay to get that done and demonstrate there isn't a need for that anymore.
And then the easement to the natural gas, I saw on the map after this that it's a curved access to it. So without 176th Street and the development of the RV park further, what happens to the easement, or what's the plan to?
Well, the easement will stay there. They'll just avoid getting to where that station is at. So right in the middle, where that yellow box is where the station is at.
Can you go to the next slide?
Yes.
With the site plan. So just trying to see where that is now. I see the easement going to the box, but the Werner property is, the Werner property doesn't have, in this picture, the site plan isn't presented here of what they're doing with the Werner property.
Correct.
Okay. But nonetheless, the center portion is going to be dedicated as green space.
Well, when you say center portion?
Well, we're seeing the green area just to the southeast of the natural gas portion.
Wish I had a pointer.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
Well, that'll all be part of the Dickey's RV.
So that's in for site plan development. So that'll be developed.
So then the property where the easement is isn't part of Werner or the Three Creeks?
No, but it doesn't go into the Michael Werner property, but it's on the Three Creeks property.
Okay.
It's an impediment to build a road through there.
Sure. I'm sure it was all thought out, but it's just hard to grasp exactly what was going on or how it was proposed. I see there's a building shown here where the 176 was going to be, and with no real access to Union from there anyways.
Right. And, you know, when this proposed road was added, I really don't think that there was any thought about putting roundabouts up the I-5 179th on ramps, off ramps. So I'm fairly certain it wasn't considered back then, because it's been a mindset change with roundabouts since I started in 2005, and I'm sure this line has been on the map longer than that. I'm not sure exactly how long, but I don't think it was there and it was contemplated. So it makes sense the way the site plan is laid out that they wouldn't use access onto Union Road, and so they wouldn't need the proposed road to built through there.
Yeah, if they were to access Union Road, they'd be driving all the way south in order to get back around.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Gary.
Welcome.
Any other questions? Jack?
Yeah, so just kind of a clarification. So when we have a proposed road, is that something that we basically draw on a map and say, if you ever develop here, you have to create this portion of road for us and deed the county the property? Or is it some kind of easement that we purchase across existing parcels? How does that?
So we have a 20-year Arturo Atlas map, and we have proposed roads on there. So if someone comes in and their property touches a proposed road, and if it's in the middle of a segment like of Michael Werner's property, we would require them to build a half street improvement on their portion of the property. And then when the development comes in on the other sides, we would require them to build those portions of the road. So they'd have to dedicate the right of way and build it.
Okay, so the process from a county standpoint is we create our traffic network virtually, basically, and then as individuals would like to develop, they're required then to, almost like a taking, but they're required to then develop that portion of what we've deemed that road to be.
Yes.
Their portion.
Yeah. Okay. And the Arturo Atlas, it's based off of population. The amount of land use and job growth. So we went through the Arturo Atlas. So it needs to be updated, but I mean, we make incremental changes like this.
Sure. No, I was just trying to understand kind of the process behind that, of how that how that's created. And then, and then, so the road, my other question was we removed this, but the binding part of the agreement is the developer's agreement. I'm not sure where what happens if we remove it and they go, well, we don't want to do that. We want to do this instead.
They can do that.
What's that?
They can do that.
They can do that.
Yep. It's a preliminary site plan that they're showing us. And so they have the choice to say, I don't want to do that anymore. They change their mind. But, you know, on the flip side is Michael Werner is interested in getting this removed. So, if they change their mind, you know, they could develop the site differently without having the road built. And in the end, access to Union Road would be removed anyways.
What protects our county residents, I guess, from a developer saying, proposing a great plan, transportation network, and then they go, so we remove this impediment to their development plan, and they have a secondary plan in their back pocket as soon as it's approved, and then go, sorry, we changed your mind, different economic conditions, COVID, you know.
Yeah, we've seen that throughout the county.
So my question is, as a commission, how do we protect our citizens from that?
This is Oliver. I think to answer your question, there are circumstances. It's not always the case, but there are circumstances where we propose a road to go, we know more, and then we come up with what other alternatives are there for that circulation for the neighborhood or for that new area to occur. And we do that very often when we have a real proposed development in front of us and we look at the landscape, we look at everything, and then make a conclusion that maybe where the road was originally planned is no longer feasible, for example. And plans change, and we look at it and then make adjustments. I don't think, and I don't know whether the proponent of this development are going to come in tomorrow and change their mind. I will be speculating. I don't know. But when they come in for road mod or any other options that are available to them, we will review it and then make a determination as to what other alternative is there to continue. The goal is to look for safety. The goal is also to look at circulation plan, if you will. But those are things that are reviewed when an application is in front of us.
And even if the road is not there, say you guys, the Planning Commission recommends to take it out and they decide to change their mind, they still have to address the county's transportation code with circulation. So they'll still have to provide circulation throughout the site. So it would still have access and it would still protect our residents, you know, with circulation in that area. So they still have to provide that.
So, I guess, regardless, if they decide to do something different, they still have to create the same environment, so to speak, for the circulation. So they might propose something different, but as long as it meets the same goals, but we're not going to lose out on, ultimately, we won't lose out on circulation.
Correct.
Because otherwise it just doesn't get developed.
Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions? As usual, good job, Gary. And we're going to move on now to Capital Facilities Financial Plan. Jackie, are you there?
I am, and I'm presenting along with Oliver. So I heard him, so I know he's there. Oliver, do you want me to run through the slides and then you pipe in on anything I'm leaving out or any questions?
Yes, go ahead. I did make it in. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, will do.
Okay, will do.
Well, good evening. My name is Jackie Camp. Tonight, Oliver and I will be presenting on an update to the existing Appendix G of our current adopted comprehensive plan that has to do with the county's capital facilities financial plan. Next slide, please. So a little bit of background, and this is all outlined in the staff report that's posted. And of course, the actual CFP document also posted with your materials. The CFFP, as we call it for short, presents a plan for financing county capital facilities identified in the Clark County's 20-year comprehensive growth management plan. So that's for years 2015 to 2035, the current adopted plan. And this is as required by the Washington State's Growth Management Act. Specifically, the GMA statute RCW 70A-070-3D requires the county to have a 6-year financial plan that will finance such capital facilities within projected funding capacities and clearly identify sources of public money for such purposes. The county CFFP, which, as I mentioned, is Appendix G of our current comprehensive plan, is intended to identify funding sources for those principal capital facilities provided by the county itself. It covers the following types of capital facilities: transportation, parks and open space, stormwater drainage and water quality, and county buildings and other facilities. So financing for facilities provided by entities other than Clark County, such as the cities within the county, the school districts, and fire districts, can be found in our current adopted 20-year comprehensive plan, the Chapter 6, Capital Facilities and Utilities element, and Appendix E, Capital Facility Plans Review and Analysis. Also note, the proposed updated CFFP presented tonight provides expected costs and anticipated funding sources for all capital facilities provided by Clark County for this 6-year period of 2023 to 2028. So we're updating it for these 6 years. And want to note that reflected in this updated CFFP is financial data from the county's 6-year transportation improvement plan for 2023-28. And the 6-year County Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan for 2022 to 2027, both adopted by Council in 22. So it's reflecting the information from those 6-year plans. The proposed action, next slide, please. The proposed action tonight, or for your hearing in a couple weeks, and for your review, is only for an update to the county's CFFP to update the plan from the 6-year period of 2016 to 2021 to 2023 to 2028. The proposal does not include any update to Chapter 6 of the comprehensive plan or Appendix E. Any updates to Chapter 6 and Appendix E will occur with the periodic update that you all will be discussing a lot in the next couple of years for the 2025 comprehensive plan that's due on or before June 30th, 2025. Next slide. As you'll see in the staff report, we always provide a summary of public involvement on how this project comes to fruition or is initiated. So this was a docket item that was in Community Planning's work program that was reviewed by Council in December of 21. As I mentioned, it reflects the two 6-year programs for transportation and parks that was also reviewed by the Planning Commission and approved by Council in 2022. We're also required to submit any plan amendments to the Department of Commerce. So that was done, and you'll see that in the hearing packet as well. So they received our request for review. and then the legal notice for the March 16th Planning Commission hearing. Next slide. So the applicable criteria for this plan amendment is the Clark County Code 4560, which is the plan and code amendments, and which states the county shall review capital facilities plan and updates at a minimum of every 4 years in type 4 public hearings, which is what we'll be doing, for those facilities subject to county jurisdiction. In updating capital facilities plans, policies, and procedures, the county must determine that these updates are consistent with applicable provisions of the GMA and the WAC, and policies and implementation measures of the comprehensive plan, and in conformance with the purposes and intent of the applicable interjurisdictional agreements. We also have criteria or evaluation with the Growth Management Act and planning goals. And it corresponds with goal one related to urban growth, where we encourage development in urban areas where there's adequate public facilities or services exist. And goal two, public facilities and services, ensure that those public facilities and services are necessary to support development shall be adequate to serve the development at the time the development is available for occupancy. We also cite RCW 3678073, which is comprehensive plans, mandatory elements, and the WAC 3651964015, the capital facilities element. And this statute describes the mandatory requirements, the capital facilities element in the comp plan, including an inventory of existing facilities, a forecast of future needs, the proposed location and capacities, and at least a 6-year financing plan, which is that is what this is. So, and I cite the WAC as well for 3651954015C, which is specific to the financing plan, which this is. So our overall findings is that the update to the capital facilities financial plan for the 6-year period of 2023 to 28 is consistent with all the relevant county code and state statutes cited above. Next slide. As you've seen in the past, the other three presentations, here's our project timeline. So today we are at work session to present for preparation for the hearing on March 16th. And then following that, there will be that overall work session that has been mentioned for the annual reviews and dockets. And we are scheduled or tentatively scheduled for this specific update to go before council on May 2nd. Next slide. So that concludes this presentation, and Oliver and I are here to answer any questions you may have. And if we don't know and we need to go back to some staff that helped us put this together, we will do that so that we can get you your answers before the hearing.
Gentlemen, questions? Jack, go, sorry.
So I guess, Jackie, my question, while I was reading the staff report, we talked about, from what I understood, TIF fees, and as part of the planning process of the updating of the code, and that, so what I'm kind of gleaning from that is, we have a funding mechanism built in with the overall plan. Is that correct? That there's a financial component that's planned for, as well as we have the transportation plan. But then,
well, recall that what this is identification of the projects within the next 6 years. And in that identification, it also included the public share, which is where things like property tax or road fund comes in, and impact fees, traffic impact fees in the case of transportation. So those are the source of funding. There are other mechanism like grants, matching, that is all included in the transportation 6-year. I believe that the Planning Commission saw the tip when it came before you, and you did approve that, and the council approved it. This is a compilation of all those that you've already approved, putting it in the financial plan. The same is true for parks, existing needs, and then what comes in as new development, when which may include parks impact fee. So that is how this funding, identifying the funding sources, came about. So yes, there is both private and public share, but we have to identify that some comes in into property tax, you know, for road fund. Then we have, you know, some grants. Then we have the private share in the form of paying the impact fees, if you will.
So kind of to follow up that, the thing that kind of triggered this thought was the last hearing that was there, and we were removing the general commercial zone, which had a pretty, and then there was the boundary line thing, which still have questions about changing it to residential from general commercial, and there was an additional 20 acres. And then that had a TIF, an aggregate TIF assumption associated with that. When that stuff changes, when those elements change, and it seems like it was a fairly significant amount, I think it was like 11 million plus the other 20 or 40 acres, which I'm not clear about, how does that affect this kind of plan? Because if we're short $20 million in projected TIF fees from the intersection, how do these things integrate, I guess? It's like, what's the ramifications? So we approve one thing, how does it affect the other thing? Or is it kind of in violation of what we had approved?
We'll answer it this way, and that is, we are going to look at that entire area. Remember, the council have not made any decision. It was a recommendation which the council can reject, modify, or go along with the Planning Commission recommendation. So we are going to, what often happens is that projects in those areas are going to be reassessed. If assuming that that proposal were to be approved, then the projects in those areas are going to be reassessed, delayed, modified, or put off for some time. That would be my immediate answer. But I wouldn't conclude that as a done deal. So it's still going to be reviewed and considered by the council. We will we will present that differently, not differently, but come up with, you know, what is the true impact should that zone change be granted. There are roads out there or infrastructure out there identified that needs to be built. If that were to go through, then we have to reassess and maybe take some projects off. That may be what we get.
Yeah. Brian?
Yeah, you know, I read the staff report and hear the presentation, and I'm still not entirely clear what we're doing or what we're approving. I understand maybe it's just a date change to the report. I don't know, can you help me with maybe more simple terms of what we're looking at here?
One, you're correct, is a date change. Those TIP that you approved has a date change from 2023 to 2028. The parks, which you also saw, has a date 2023 to 2027. We are supposed to have a 6-year financial plan. So what the version that we have now is 2021 to 2016. So remember, we have a 20-year capital facilities plan. We are supposed to show from time to time how we're going to finance the first 6 years. Fix is six years until we hit that 20 year. So it is from the 20-year lease that we have the 6-year. So this is really, I wouldn't say reapproving what you've already approved, but we are required to show, because if those projects are not in this document, if audited, we will have to, we have to identify that these projects are on the 6-year financial plan. And the current one doesn't have all this project lists on them. So that is part of the reason why we're updating it to be most current to the project that are in the 6-year.
Okay, Oliver. Yeah, thanks. It looks like and we're shifting the window of the period that we're looking at to make sure some projects drop off that are completed and other projects are brought into that 6-year window, and that the financing or the facilities plan is consistent with that. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, thanks.
May I?
Go ahead, Christine.
Yeah, thanks. In the last comp plan, one of the petitioners who appealed it complained that the county didn't have specific 20-year project list in its capital facilities financial plan, and our response to that was it's a 6-year list, and we've got that, and we have our 20-year plans to the extent that we need them, and so we're in compliance. So this is one of the things that's just required to be in compliance when the plan is updated.
Thank you. Eldon, anything?
Just one quick one. So in the revenues from new development, you have like $169 million. Is that is the high degree of confidence, is that work, is that development that's already known that to going to be happen, or you're guessing that it's going to happen?
It's an estimate within the 6-year window that if all the land use were to occur, remember that these fees, particularly impact fees, are collected at the time of building permit application. So as people pull in their application, they pay the fee. So it's an estimate of everything coming to play within that time period.
Does the county do a pretty good job estimating in previous plans? I mean, you have a high degree of confidence that that's going to be met?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And we use that for matching, you know, grants and other opportunities.
I just wanted to know you didn't pull the number out of the
No, our finance team is very good.
Okay, any other questions? With that said, thank you, Jackie and Oliver. And any comments for the Planning Commission from anybody? Oliver, do you have anything for us, generally speaking?
No, I don't. As I said last time, we are going to be coming to the Planning Commission from time to time. We have, I would have done that today, but I think we may have shared with you the proposed public participation plan that we are going to be sending to the, that the council will be having a hearing on. I believe it's March 21st. This is the public participation plan and timeline or scope of work for the plan update. So maybe we will ask you to watch the hearing at your convenience. It's going to be 6 p.m. and we will be coming to you from time to time, having you weigh in or at least do a work session or maybe make a recommendation. The council will be picking up, selecting a population that we have to plan for. We will be sharing certain information with the Planning Commission, see if you would like to make a recommendation to council. So we will be from time to time checking in with the Planning Commission, keeping you updated as to where we are. As I said in the past, don't hold me to the timeline. It could shift, but we will do our best to hold to the timeline and dialogue and share with you. It is going to be extensive public outreach, and you're going to play a role in making your recommendation to the council as we move forward. That's all I have.
OFM and Commerce.
Thank you.
OFM and Commerce.
Oh, last thing from me, my staff is reminding me that we have an informational meeting on March 28th from 1:30 to 4:30. You are all invited. The Office of Financial Management staff from the office, State Office of Financial Management, they are the ones that do the actual population forecasting. You asked a question about how is our forecast, so you may have opportunity to listen to them. These are state agency that put out population forecast for the entire state and for the 39 counties in the state. So they will be giving us an information how they do go about their population forecasting. We're also going to have staff from the State Department of Commerce. They're going to be sharing with us the new housing bill that you hear us talk about. That is House Bill 1220. It is one of the requirements now that doesn't say encourage. We have to plan for all segments of the population, and then the, you know, the relationship between the population and housing unit. They're going to be able to present that at this March 28 informational hearing, because you're going to be hearing that throughout this planning process. So mark it on your calendar on March 28 from 1:30 to 4:30. It's going to be visual, so you don't have to come to this building.
Oh,
yeah, we are going to be sending out more information on how you're going to log in. Saves you time.
Anytime you can make those virtual, because people like me, like I can catch them on my foot period or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and you know, we're also inviting our CVTV to cover it for those that may be at work. They can watch it at a later time.
Yes.
Got a comment.
Yes.
Okay, hey, Oliver, recently I received the annual report on land use and transportation that you and your staff put out, and I really liked that report. I thought it was a really good overview of all the different projects and commissions and committees and you know, what's going on in the county. So that report was, I thought, really helpful to understand the relationships that all these commissions have and their interactions and their goals and what they've actually accomplished and what we've been doing. And then, okay, one other comment. Not asking for more work for you or your staff, but I remember a report that we got maybe 2 or 3 years ago that showed what decisions we had made and then how they were actually implemented by the council, or what they approved or didn't approve or modified. And is that an easy answer, or you know, I'm not looking for much more than saying, you know, hey, we said yes and they agreed, or we said no and they disagreed, kind of a
I'm glad that you brought that up, but first of all, thank you for that kind words. Our staff, we have that report put out every year. So if you go to planning webpage and look at community planning overview, you can see from 2011 all the way to 2022. So we put out the report every year. So thank you very much.
Yeah, it was well done. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. On your second question, we used to, at the end of the year, put out a summary. I will come to the Planning Commission and put out a summary. I call it, are we staff in tune with the Planning Commission, and is the Planning Commission in tune with the council? Where is the disconnect? I would like to put out a very similar summary. As Jose indicated, we are looking at completing all the work, all the hearing, the docket, this type of hearings that you, I think we have until April to finish the 2022 items and annual reviews. So with that, we then go to the council. At their completion, we will provide a summary to the Planning Commission just to show you how they landed, whether they agree with you or not. And for me, it tells me that you're not rubber stamping what I put before you. So we just a way of me knowing how the Planning Commission, you know, voted or for whatever it is in deliberation, and it helps me and staff to do a better job, write differently, if you will. So I would continue. I would like to come back to sharing with you what the council did.
Yeah, I can see that report after the council actually hears all of the recommendations we've made, and I understand they take quite a while to get through the council and finalize. So yeah, thanks for keeping that on the list of summaries.
Welcome, sir.
Great, thank you for the nice dinner. That was really nice of you and Sonia. So with that said,
Chair, yes. Could I just want to make, I just wanted to share one other thing. Okay. The housing project, so we've been working on implementing strategies from the housing option study and action plan that you all reviewed and recommended approval for in 21. Brian's been attending some of our technical code group meetings, but I wanted to share that we're finishing that first batch of code amendment proposals, and we are going to be scheduling, or we have scheduled, but we're about to send out information about it for our public meeting that we're going to share with the public on those code amendment proposals. So that's going to be Thursday, March 23rd. At 6 o'clock. So you guys will probably receive the email and news release that'll give you some more information about the details of the meeting. But I just wanted to bring that up since you all have been a part of that work. And those have to do with middle housing strategies and smaller single family strategies. And then later this spring, we're going to start the second batch with the technical code group that's been assisting us, and those will focus on multifamily strategies and regulated affordable housing. So we're going to keep chugging along and try to get some of these code amendments through. The first batch, we're hoping to get to council. They'll come to you. That's the other piece. So you're going to see, we're going to have a work session with you in April, and then again in May, and with a hearing scheduled for you all in May. So your second Thursday in May for the first batch. And then we're hoping to go to council in the summer for those first batch, and then start the technical code group in April. So you'll see the second batch probably in the later part of the summer or early fall with council following. So just wanted to give you a heads up FYI on that, but you'll be getting and seeing more information on that.
As always, thank you. Appreciate that, Jackie. Anything else? That said, we are adjourned.